Yeah. So I want to talk some more about the theme of the seven factors of awakening, and particularly referring to the latter three. I didn't make the initial and common sort of differentiation that is often described with regard to them, that mindfulness is the primary and the balancing factor. Then you have three arousing factors, which are investigation, energy or effort, and joy, rapture, uplift. And then you have three calming, tranquilizing, cooling qualities, such as calm, concentration, equanimity. And one of the primary things I was speaking about this morning was it's not just about developing all these qualities, but balancing them, bringing them into balance. And a number of you have referred to the fact that the apparent permission and encouragement given towards investigation can lead to a lot of thinking and proliferation. And it really, there's a broad sense of balancing these two, in a way, sides of the equation. The engaged, activated, energized, and the calm and cooling side of things. And so with the latter three then, the experience of calm, of tranquility, is this quality that it's a little bit like when a body of water is unruffled, that the mind isn't really chasing after or running away from experiences. And we might notice this as something quite enjoyable. We might also encounter it as something a little bit unstimulating. It's not always what we... When we find it, we might think we're looking for calm, but it's not unusual to discover it and feel a little bit bored or unexcited, or it's not quite as good as I thought it was going to be. Because we tend to be a little bit addicted to intensity. We tend to want to be stimulated. And although we can feel at times exhausted and frustrated by all that stimulation, its absence, or the absence of feeling stimulated, doesn't give us so much, in a way, reflection about me, that I can know I'm excited, or I'm distressed, or I'm... And so if we're not in any given moment feeling particularly excited or distressed, we go very busily looking for something that will get us excited or make us distressed. And hence we often encounter ourselves in our inner life in one of those two conditions. So one of the things about calm is also seeing we might have a mixed relationship to it. It's not unusual. But that in and of itself, there's something really, really sweet about a quality, that quality of just not having to do anything or being engaged, entangled in things so much. And we mostly or often appreciate it in other people when we see it. Calm, we can recognize the beneficial effect that it has. So there's that quality of calm. And it's a bit like, I'm not sure this metaphor is precise, but it's a bit like if we think of the mind as a source of luminosity, which is an expression, a manifestation of luminosity. Calm is, if we think of a torch or a light source, it's not getting shaken around, it's not going here, there, the other place. Okay? So we're not pointing it all over the place, it's just kind of there, doing what it does. And then concentration, we could understand, or that gathering, focusing quality, it's more like the ability to focus, I think I said already this morning, to gather in that sense of luminosity or the capacity for attention, for mindfulness, and to focus it, to refine and focus it. And if you take the bulb out of a good torch and just light the bulb up, it doesn't provide a lot of illumination. But if you put behind the bulb a lens that gathers and focuses it, suddenly you can look at something at a distance away and see it really clearly. So concentration has that effect of taking the mindful, the knowing, the awareness, the attentiveness of mind, and sharpening it into a more penetrative capacity. Just in the same way that a torch, if well focused, the light travels some distance, we can see things more clearly. But if we really focus it down into a laser light, same stuff that's floating all around us, bouncing off our skin, off each other to let us see, that stuff will go through solid metal if you concentrate enough. And the mind has the capacity to penetrate things that have appeared opaque, solid, or impenetrable through the faculty of concentration. Not just in terms of what our comprehension is now seeing, but actually in terms of physical reality, which is, as science is, it likes to think, science likes to think it's recently discovered this. It's actually been knowledge in the human body of wisdom for thousands of years, but science has really recently discovered that everything is mostly space. There's not a lot of solid stuff there, it just looks that way, because it's vibrating fast enough, you can't see the gaps. But sufficient refinement of the mind actually can penetrate through that, just in the same way that light, it's kind of random stuff that doesn't seem to do much, can actually go through metal when it's concentrated. So there's this gathering in that we do, that we learn. But it's often what we tend to assume meditation is really about. It's often the thing that we think, I can do it if I can get concentrated, or more commonly, I can't do it if we're not getting concentrated. Who here has never in their meditation life, even if they only started this morning, had the thought, I can't do it, based on the idea that they can't get their mind to stay where they thought it was supposed to be? Who is the person who hasn't had that thought? And so we associate this particular quality with meditation, many of us. And it's part of it, but it's not all of it. And concentration specifically in the dynamic is to be balanced with investigation. If the mind's too busy, we actually need to bring that just focusing, not trying to understand, not trying to discern, but just connect, just simplify. There's a balance there. If the mind is really still, and it might be very calm and still, but we're not going to learn anything there. It might be pleasant enough, but we're not going to get anything of real, there's not going to be any real deepening or awakening that happens out of that by itself, unless it's balanced by some curiosity, some investigation. This penetrative power needs to be harnessed. And so they go together. And the last of the calming qualities is equanimity. Equanimity. It's this capacity to be okay with whatever comes. Whether things are calm or agitated, whether they're delightful or distressing. But just some sense of it's okay. In the midst of all this, I can meet it, I can handle it, there is a capacity. In a sense, it's kind of the understanding that at some level, we'll survive it, anything that comes to us, anything that arises, we will survive it until the point at which we don't, in which case, it's no longer an issue. And some of that is to do with, in a way, the depth of grounding ourselves into the present moment. I often think of equanimity. Equanimity isn't that we like everything. It's that we don't withdraw from anything. Sometimes, or one time defined as being equally near to all things. And the image is like the sun that shines on whatever is there. It doesn't say, I'll shine on this and I won't shine on that. Just whatever's there, it's there. It shines on. So equanimity is that kind of welcoming or allowing, receiving of all things. It doesn't pick and choose. It doesn't say, I'll have this and I don't want that. Even if I don't like that. Even if that might not be skillful, that's a good word. Skillful or healthy. Maybe I could be more concise if I combined words. Skillful. Interesting. It'll probably be in the dictionary in a little while. So there's this capacity to kind of see something that might be unskillful or unhealthy and not be in conflict with it. Doesn't mean that we can't seek to attend to it or address it, but we see that the fact that it's like this now, there's reasons for it. It's not a random accident. It's not because we're a total, you know, rubbish meditator. It's because there's reasons for this, which if we understand, we'll be able to work with. And So understanding a certain lawfulness in things is one element of equanimity, understanding karma, essentially, in terms of that, to see that basically what we sow, we reap. So far as we act out of goodness, kindness, care, wholesomeness comes back to us. So far as we act out of selfishness, greed, aggression, anger, or disrespect for others, actually it generates pain for us. We start to understand that no matter what we're having to deal with, no matter whether it appears to come from something out of me, or if it's coming at me from the world, the way I respond to it is my way of moving it towards what's wholesome. It might feel really horrible, but what will actually move it towards what's wholesome is that I bring forth from me that which can make a difference to the way it is. And so in that way, there's an empowerment that comes. That's one aspect of equanimity, that one isn't taking those things that come, particularly those things that are difficult, as somehow things that shouldn't be. Because we all are challenged. We all have difficulties. We all, at times, maybe even feel overwhelmed or afraid or confused. But if we can take those experiences as opportunities to learn, rather than evidence of somehow our personal failure at life, we all have to learn. Then we can hold them differently. We still have to do the learning, but we don't have to hold the reality of life somehow against ourselves, or hold it against life, which is the way it goes. We blame me, or we blame it, or them, or someone, God, or you know, our parents. It's much the same thing in the end. When we're little. And the other aspect of equanimity is that it's like having access through the development and cultivation of just what we're doing here to be able to root into not a particular set of experiences or conditions, but the very sense in the moment of being present. The actual what happens when we open into, when we in a way root into, when we establish our roots in a sense of the here-ness and now-ness of things that is always here and now, and never taken away from by whatever shows up in the space of here and now, but which we often don't see because we're so busy engaging with what showed up in that space with our thoughts of I like it, I've got to keep it, I don't like it, I want to get rid of it. Which is, in a sense, the absence of equanimity. And the image that I find useful for this, it's like with the torch that I talked about before, it's the willingness to shine the torch on anything and see what's there. And sometimes what we see looking back is not that pleasant, but we need to see it. So that's one kind of image we could use. Equanimity is willing to see what's here. And we have to be, if we want to wake up, if we want to live a free life. We want to live in peace in this life, with peace in our hearts. It takes courage. And another image for equanimity I find useful, talking in terms of the water that might be calm, and sometimes we confuse a little bit, I think, calm and equanimity. Don't always use the language to clearly distinguish them, and not that you have to in language, but it's useful for this point. So calm is like when the waters don't have any waves. There's no wind, there's no current, there's not much going on. It's calm. It's like, Equanimity is more in the middle of the storm. On a boat, you have a thing called a keel, which is this bit of material that sticks down deep enough into the water so that the wind and the waves don't tip it over, don't capsize it. If you put a boat in the water without a keel, it's really easy to knock it over. The waves will do it. The wind will do it. Yeah. Someone moving to one side of the boat will do it. And so learning to root ourselves, we could say, to use that language, to root our heart and mind and life into the present moment, it's like the development of that keel. So that sense of, it might be windy and stormy and wavy going on all over. But there's another dimension. That's more a horizontal dimension, the surface of the water, the surface of the mind, the surface of this planet. Look at what goes on there. Our hearts may deeply grieve for some of what we see. It's true. It's right. It's appropriate. Just as we might deeply grieve for some of our own experience, not just what we see in the world. But there's also a vertical dimension, which is very much the territory of equanimity and born of wisdom, in which there's an ability to see that that surface level is not the whole. It's part of it. It's not to be discounted. It needs to be attended to. But it is not the whole thing. And in fact, just as if you look at the ocean, it appears to be this swirling, wavy, wild thing from the outside. But from the inside, actually most of it is relatively calm and quiet. And the bit on the surface is just the skin. So that's part of what this is pointing to. And interestingly, effort and equanimity, although they're also part of those two whole packages of the three arousing and the three calming, they're also kind of in balance or need to be brought into balance. So effort, sometimes when we're efforting, we're trying to make something happen too much and we're not sufficiently established in the equanimity that says it's okay however this unfolds. It doesn't have to go this way. It's all right if it goes that way. It's all right if actually I spend 30 minutes trying to be mindful and can barely keep my mind in my breath or on my body or in this moment for half a second before I'm gone for 10 minutes. It's all right. There's equanimity there. We can say, it's all right. And sometimes there's plenty of equanimity. It's, oh, I've just sat for 40 minutes. Actually, I don't think I noticed my breath. I'm not sure I was here. That's fine. Yeah, time for dinner. And it might be actually useful to say, oh, well, that's great. Lots of equanimity. Was there any effort? Do I need to think, maybe I could go for actually being attentive just a little more and see what happens? Yeah? So it's not that one is right or wrong there, but it's like seeing, oh, all that equanimity, great. What about a little effort? Interestingly for us, most of us in the acculturation that's predominant in Western culture, and it's not unique to it or absent in Eastern culture, but a lot of our acculturation is much more towards the emphasis in the investigation, effort, joy, and let's get some more joy type thing. Yeah? At one particularly, let's get more joy. Television tells you how, you know. And so most of us will actually find that what we need to initially develop more is our connection with and access to qualities of calm, concentration, equanimity. Because we're mostly being told it's all right to be, and you need to be actually really upset about the way things are and trying to fix and change them, and you need to be really trying very hard to do it, and you should be succeeding at it and feeling really good all the time. That's kind of a message we get. So in meditation teaching, often, certainly in this culture, I and other teachers, I'm sure, will give more emphasis to calm, concentration, equanimity. And yet, that's just because of that's the general mixture that we encounter in ourselves and each other. And what we actually need to see for ourselves is what's needed here. There isn't a guaranteed formula for how it's supposed to be every time for each one of us. It's what we have to notice, huh? What's needed here. And of course, the risk of it, we can spend a lot of time trying to figure out which particular one of these seven factors I should be adding, reducing, balancing. And it comes back to that, okay, maybe that's enough investigation and we need a little bit more calm or something like that. Equanimity, maybe. Was there anything in that that didn't quite gel? There will be time for more broad open questions towards the end or anything else, but I just wanted to check again in terms of the material that I've just focused on now, whether that kind of came together in a reasonable way, made sense or didn't. If anyone has a question to clarify the specifics of that, I'm happy to hear. Again, I'm aware there's quite a bit of material that has been recorded. You can listen to it again. It'll be online in days, usually. Very wonderful service. Maybe weeks, but it won't be far away. I don't want to put any pressure on them.
Week,
okay, great. Well, that's 7 days. I'm just thinking if there was anything else I wanted to say on those for now. So one other thing that's kind of useful to understand with regard to the factors of awakening, they call, as I said, the Bojanga, which I always think of Bob Dylan's Mr. Bojangles when I hear that. Somehow it makes me feel good. Having said that, I just forgot what I was going to say. Feeling good's all right. Probably wondering what it was now, aren't you? So am I. Okay, yeah. So the seven factors of awakening are understood as the, in a way, also counterbalancing forces to the arising of hindrances in our mind. The things that make it difficult for us to be really present and connected. And that they kind of have a way of taking the power out of those particular forces, which are the force of greed, of craving, of aversion and resistance, of sort of heaviness, drowsiness, sloth, sleepiness, dullness. The fourth being restlessness, agitation, sort of over-excitement. And the fifth being doubt or unsurety, uncertainty. And so, that you know, in terms of craving and aversion, some sense of equanimity, a sense of just, actually, it's okay for things to be the way they are. And calm, I don't need to fix them, so to speak. Those qualities balance the agitation in the mind that comes from it. With restlessness and agitation, and which often comes consequent on craving or aversion being present, with restlessness, it's actually being able to say, oh, well, there's restlessness, okay, so perhaps I could just bring to mind that that's an absence of calm. And often what it means is restlessness is often that there's an excess of energy and there's not enough sort of holding for that, not enough space for that energy, so it puts us under pressure. And so recognizing that, we think, oh, restlessness, rather than trying to fix restlessness, it's like, just notice what it's like to experience an absence of calm. We can understand it, oh, it's the absence of calm. Rather than, oh, I shouldn't be restless. No, just calm isn't here right now. Okay, so maybe another way to look at it that might be a bit less provoking of a reaction. Oh, why am I restless? Well, calm isn't happening. Or in terms of drowsiness, dullness, it's actually very clearly tends to need a response from the either effort, and often sort of, you know, if we're drowsy, we need to make an effort. That's it. Sometimes we need to have a rest. That's true too. But if it's more in the form of a hindrance rather than genuine tiredness, and so, you know, it's really helpful to stand up or to sit up straight or to put one's arms up in the air, as one or two of you have done, and I often encourage people to do. It's really interesting how hard it is to fall asleep with your arms up here. You know, and if anyone doubts it, try it. Anyone who's feeling drowsy and thinks I can't stay awake, it's not true. You can stay awake, you just have to put your arms up here and keep them there, and you will not fall asleep, it's guaranteed. Really, I almost never guarantee anything to anyone in meditation, but this is guaranteed. If you put them back down, you'll fall asleep, or you can. But while they're still up here, you think I can't keep them up that long? No, who knows? I mean, I don't know whether I can, but maybe you can. There's a practice in the Tibetan tradition of Kumnye, where they put their arms out like this, and they stand there, initially for minutes, but ultimately for hours. Like that. Very interesting. Making an effort with our body. Our mind can't get our mind to brighten up, But if you make an effort with your body, which your mind can tell your body to do that, mine can, yours can, that, making an effort with the body, brightens the mind. Although my mind can't tell itself to brighten, I can tell my body to enact energy, express energy, and that energizes the mind. Just as the mind is stressed or agitated, the mind can't tell itself to get quiet and relax and be at ease. You try telling your mind, stop being so agitated. It doesn't work. But what you can say is, oh, the agitation's expressing itself as contraction in my body. What about if I just breathe out and feel that agitation, or even relax into the experience of it? And as the body softens, the mind relaxes. So there's many different ways we can work with these qualities. It's a sense of, oh yeah, there's a calming quality involved in relaxation. And when we actually tune into the breath, that every in-breath is an activation energizing. It's part of the uprising, the energizing qualities. Every time we breathe out, we're actually contacting the releasing, softening, calming energies of our experience. And they're right there. These are not things you have to produce. They're happening in every breath. The body engages and releases. Engages and releases. And sometimes just tuning into those helps us to balance things. So if we're agitated, tune into the out-breath. If we're tired, tune more into the in-breath. And you actually start to sense how when you give attention to something, this is key in this practice, or in this aspect of how to practice with things, when you give attention to something, energy follows it. It kind of has this remarkable effect. If you give attention a quality of relaxation, it spreads very often. And sometimes why we don't want to give attention to our reactivity and our unpleasant things, because we're afraid they're going to spread. But it's actually often the reaction to it that we need to attend to. So anyway, I didn't actually intend to get into all of that just now, but it was more in terms of seeing a certain relationship between the factors of awakening and the hindrances, in terms of hindrances being basically those things which we have to understand and address in the journey of awakening. And the factors of awakening being those qualities which we have to cultivate, we have to recognize first of all, we have to cultivate, develop and mature and bring into balance. And the capacity of mindfulness is that capacity which can see the balance or imbalance and recognize what's needed for that balancing. So in the end, if all this sounds like, wow, that's a lot of theoretical stuff, and I'm not quite sure I can do all of that in my 20 minutes before breakfast, don't worry. Just stay with that mindful intention to notice what's happening and bring a little bit of curiosity and acceptance. Allowing it to be and being interested in it, in a way, brings those whole territories in a more kind of broad brush sense. So let's have a short period of walking now, just 15 minutes, if the bell could ring in 10. We'll come back for 8:30. My clock runs about 4 minutes ahead of that one, so if you're looking at that one, I make it just after 8:15. I don't know what the bell ringer's clock is. Okay, good. So the bell ringer and I are on the same page. With the walking, let it be simple. Don't need to process too much of the material that's been offered. And again, the invitation just to notice the presence or absence of any of these 7 factors that I've named. Who can name them? I won't test you. Mindfulness.
Inquiry.
Energy. Okay, we get, yeah.
Joy.
Tranquility. Yeah, I think I'm hearing them all. did we miss one? Equanimity. Good, thank you. Yeah, so just again, notice their presence or absence and advanced course, the effect of noticing, if you wish. But you don't have to do all of that.